Mm-hmm. Well, that's the first cow my brother and I ever owned. And we kept her until she was quite old, and she wouldn't breed again, so we decided to get her. She was fat, so we're going to butcher her and sell her. So I made a deal with Ira Larkins to take her down on a certain day at a certain time, and I took her in there, and he took one look at her. He said, "My God," he said, "I can't handle a lot. She weighed 1,700 pounds standing up. It was too big." And I said, "Well, you can sell it. You can get rid of it." And no, he wouldn't. So we went back out and we had it in a wagon, a team deal. What in the world are we going to do with this? And I said, I think we're going to sell it. Let's go in the store and buy a meat saw and butcher knife. And let's take a day off and peddle that meat here in town. And we did. We sold every pound of it.
Off the back of the truck?
Off the back of a wagon.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let them do that now.
No. That's a deal for life if we'd done that now. But we found out while we were in there talking to him, while we looked in the counter, and steak is worth so much and spoils is worth so much, you know. And so we just averaged it all up and sold us by so much a pound. I imagine probably it's about 25 or 30 cents a pound. And we sold every pound of that, up one street and down the next, and up one street and down the next. Go and rap on the door and ask them if they would like to buy some meat, and they would. Put in every house we stopped at, bought enough for a meal or two.
That's how Marvin's dad's brother sold corn. They had extra corn and they wanted to get rid of it. So Orly and his brother tried doing it, but Orly couldn't do it. Nobody would buy from it. And his brother took over selling it and sold every one of them. He was corn.
He's a better salesman than Orly was.
Younger. Well, looked more appealing.
How old were you then, just a kid at the time?
Oh, mine was about 14 or 15.
Grown up.
What are you doing to it?
She's a big one.
So that was your first cow, huh?
Yeah, and it was the first year we were up there, I think it was 1909. We were 1910. Well, you going to tell it or me?
You couldn't do it when you were 8 or 9, could you? Look, you were born in 1901, and you said you went up there in 1908 or 1909?
He was
daily mother. Well, when you get over your fit, I'll go ahead and tell her. We were just snot-nosed kids, and we were out in the woods playing around, and we found a calf. She was probably 200 or 300 pounds. She was down. She couldn't get up, and she couldn't get feed or water. So we packed feed and water to that thing for a week or 10 days. Finally got her up and walking, and she lived. So when the owner come after him that fall, somebody told him what we'd done, and he gave her to us. That's the first one we ever had. And from that day to this, I don't think I've ever been out of the cow business 100%. I don't believe I have.
What your recollections of him are. Because he is a character that I don't know of almost anybody else. Well, I know a couple people on Elk River that knew knew of him. But hardly anybody around here did. And he was a man with quite a reputation.
Well, I don't know. I guess he did this all right. He used to write letters to the foreman, to the superintendent, to really top brass in the Potlatch Lumber Company, criticize him and make him mad. And he made a lifelong enemy out of this Ralph Face. And Ralph Bass finally got him, all right. He got him in an insane asylum in a long run. But I think there were lots of things. I know there were a lot of things laid on the man that some of these jokers around Elk River and in those camps used to lay on him. They'd steal things and lay it on him. I'd heard all of the stories and that, but I was camped. I had my one camp was just as far up the road as I could get. I'd unload my horses there, and then I had a tent up so I could kind of make that headquarters. And then I had to jump on by his cabin and go to get my hunters back up in the woods. And they used to say he stole everything that you could get his hands on. And my camps were right there by him. I'd cash my groceries by putting them in the tent and pulling a tarp over them. And he never bothered so much as a package of cigarettes. I don't know, maybe I just got in good with him right off the start. I meet him, howdy, and he'd always pull his pipe out and I'd furnish tobacco so he could have a smoke. And I used to give him a can of tobacco now and then. I got along with him fine. But I got a kick out of a lot of things he did, and I used to, if I had a bunch of hunters back in the woods, I'd try and get him to come into their camp and tell them stories. Oh, there was no limit to the stories he could tell. I never believed only about one word out of 1,000, but he tells some good ones. And I had a bunch up there on Goat Ridge, about as far back as you could get. And I had a big tent, and it was tight, and it was cold night. And old George was laying along the trail there. He'd had his supper and gone to bed when I come into camp, and it was only about 5 o'clock, I guess. And I said to him, "George, come over after a while and we'll have a drink." "I, by the great God, they'll do it." And so after a while he come over, and he never threw away a pair of overalls. He put it, if they wore down till it was too cold to exist in, he'd pull another old pair over them. And I got him in and set him pretty close to the stove and then built a pretty good fire. Got about 2 glasses of drink down him. And he began to steam and smoke, and those guys trying to get out of some way to get the front door open to get some fresh air in there. No, he told us that night, he says, What kind of wine is it? Well, Glenn Mills says that's elderberry. He says, by the great gods, he says, I've made barrels of that stuff, but he never could wait till it got that good. I went by his cabin one time, and there was he had a big fireplace and had a tin over the chimney. And I never thought much about it. Went on by, and I met him up the road a couple of miles, and he asked me, any smoke coming out of the cabin? I said, no. He said, I got an elk last week, and I'm smoking it. He says, I got it all hung on the rafters all around in there, and then he says, I built up a big fire and plugged the chimney.
Oh, no.
And took off up in the woods for a week. That was the way he smoked his meat.
Did you folks want something?
Sure.
A couple of them or whatever you want. Oscar brought them over and the kids did you like them?
One time I went by his cabin and he was there. I could see smoke coming out of the chimney and stopped. And all over the yard, he had little fires and little kind of fireplaces built, and he had a 5 gallon oil can with the side cut out of it. And he had these fruit jars. He was, what do they call it, cold packing meat. He put that elk meat in a fruit jar and sealed it up just like the woman would on the kitchen stove here. Well, he built a fire out in the yard. And he was cold packing that whole elk.
And, maybe
it didn't hurt him because he was still alive the next year.
Everybody else did it. No, they didn't have a pressure cooker. See the little bird?
Yeah?
Must be the framework of it.
Hold your hand over here now.
It'll have to be up a certain way to make them look like.
Yeah.
Where do you think he got the name?
Pardon?
Where do you think he got the name Ridge Runner from?
Golly, I don't know. Where did he get it? Some of those boys at Camp X, I guess.
They used to say that he was scrounging around the garbage places there.
I doubt that. I think he went right in the cooling tent and took him a ham or whatever he wanted. I don't think he went to the garbage can. They laid it on the bear, but you know, they had quite a habit up there in those camps. Those guys would take out enough bacon to last a month, or a ham, or canned goods, or anything else they wanted. And then when the cook reported it to headquarters, why, there'd been a bear in there and destroyed all that stuff. So I imagine if the old Ridge Runner took enough stuff that they'd notice it, well, that's the explanation they'd give. The bear had been at it.
Did he just manage to exist out there for years on the game and that he could kill and what he could take?
Yes, that's true. He would go to town about once a year, he told me. And he trapped a little. And he plaster mined a little. Now, whether he ever got any gold or not, I don't know, but I bet he did. It's gold country. And he trapped and hunted. Yes, he just lived back there, a hermit. from one year's end to the next, and outside of in hunting season, or once in a while in fishing season, he never seen anybody from one year's end to the next. He didn't want to. But he did tell me that he went out to Pierce about once a year and get the few things that he needed, salt and coffee and such, if he couldn't hook it. I imagine he'd off the pot lights, probably hooked quite a lot. And then they claim that he used to go into these ranger stations after the rangers had pulled out, they'd leave things. And he'd go in and get all that and take it with him. Well, maybe he did. I know some of his neighbors doing the same thing. I didn't know that.
His neighbors.
Yeah, fellas going down the road. Some of them had a few horses. Heck, I know them go in there and take out a pretty good load on a horse. I don't know what they had in it, but I know the horse was loaded. He was sweating when he met me.
So he made a convenient scapegoat.
That's right. That's, there was a lot of that. They put him in an insane asylum. I imagine that in a big town like Chicago or some place like that, where they'd judge him crazy, they'd put him in right now. But back there, he didn't bother anybody.
Why was he crazy?
Why did
he say he was?
Oh, he was. Why? I don't know. He was. Had a form of insanity, all right?
Mm.
And on the other hand, he was smarter than a whip.
Mm.
He'd have to be, you know, to live off the land back there like that.
It was the way he acted that was strange?
The way he talked, more than anything. The things he'd tell you. He had a good garden, strawberry patch, and raised carrots and cabbage and onions. Irrigated. Yeah. Oh, just a crazy old fellow that didn't bother anybody, but I think the north end of the state had a lot of fun out of him, telling about chasing him and this and that. Hell, they didn't need to chase him or hunt for him. He had his cabin and he went there quite often. He'd leave though, he'd be gone from a week or such a matter.
Did he take a horse or travel on foot?
Oh, he never had a horse, no. I did. He never was interested in that. He didn't pay any attention to him. Just a little bit of a guy, but he packed some pretty heavy packs.
And the Forest Service base, was he part of the Forest Service, or was he?
Yeah, he was kind of a, under Bert Curtis, he was a kind of a woods foreman for that Potlatch Timber Protective Association.
Oh. And he set out to try to get rid of the guy.
Well, he did, and he finally got rid of him. I think the old fella gave him a bad time because he was everlastingly writing letters and criticizing Bates and Bradbury and Henderson and all of the people that were involved in there working, and he'd always go after the big shots. He never went down the line of a little working man. He didn't pay any attention to him, but the big shots.
Oh, I
he would really criticize him. Some of, possibly some truth in it, and then other times it was just pure fabrication.
Writing to the, like the newspapers, and or just to the potlatch.
No, he'd write the letters and leave them around where they'd get them.
Oh, I see. Leave them around.
Stick them under the door in their office, or park them where they'd get the letters, all right. And he'd always, if he was criticizing Bradbury, why he'd leave the note under Space's door, and if he was, or pinned on the gate or something. And if he was after somebody else, why, he never leave it where to be directed. He always had another man involved in it, so that he knew that the story wouldn't stop with one person, it would go on to more. It was method madness.
What would he complain about?
What?
What would he complain about?
Oh, about the management, and about how they logged, and about how they spent their money, and about who they favored, and there's just no limit. Whatever he could imagine.
Would that be the sort of stuff he'd talk about to you or something, he met you? I mean, what you call the craziness?
I'd have to prime him to get him to say anything about any of them, but I've had him fan all of them.
So, right now, he's going to let it,
I'm going to watch it.
Oh, he had a form of insanity, all right, but
the other guys had a different kind, I think. Panned him.
The ones that canned him?
Panned him.
Oh, panned him. How did you wind up getting in there and becoming a packer anyway?
I have no idea.
You?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Well, we were just in there hunting, six or seven of us. And one morning there were three guys come to camp and wanted me to haul some elk out of the woods. And I was a little leery about it because I didn't know whether there was a licensed packer in the area or not. Mm-hmm. And if there was a licensed packer in there, why, I told them to go find him if there was such a thing, and they come back at night and they said there isn't any. So I went then and took the elk out. They each had an elk, three of them. And they said to me, get a license and we'll send you all the hunters you want. So the next fall I did, I got a license and bought three or four more horses. I don't know how many I had. I had seven or eight though when I wound up in there. And on the 15th of September, when that back country opened up, those fellows were there and there were 13 of them. And Lord, I couldn't take care of that many, but I did. I scattered them out here and there and told them if they get an elk, come to the trail and catch me, because I'll be going up and down that trail every little while. And most of them got some game. They didn't all of them, but most of them. And then they went back to California and sent up three more right away. That made 16. And these three more, they wanted me to take them clear back. I took them back to Goat Ridge, And they come out of there with an elk apiece, a deer apiece. Two of them had bear, and they had their limit of birds and fish. And I'd been working my head off getting it into Troy here to get it cut up and froze. And if I had settled for it, I could have had the entire state of California up here the next week. They just mobbed me. Good hunters, good clean sportsmen, 99% of them. The only rough ones I ever got were some fellas from Portland. They worked in a printing shop down there. And they tried to... Well, they began to kick. The ferns were so high you couldn't see a elk in here. And it rained from the time they got there until they got ready to go out. Just poured. And I tell them, stay in the camp here. The weather will get good and you'll kill an elk right out there in front of the tent before you're done with it. So I went out hunting and came back in and they had taken part of the horses, loaded their camp gear and took off. Well, I thought, now I can, if I cut right down over this hill, the trail made a lot of switchbacks. If I cut right down over this hill, I'll get there ahead of them. And I did. And I was standing above the trail there with my rifle over my lap.
You're okay.
Sopping wet and madder than a hornet. And those guys come a-riding up there, you know. And I said, you guys forgot to pay me. Well, we didn't get any service from you. And I said, you can get the service from me if you stay the full time you're supposed to in here. But I packed you in and I'm evidently packing you out. So before you guys go any farther, why, if you just stop and pay me, well, I'll let you go on. And you know, they looked at that old rifle and they paid me and went on.
And what?
They went on out. But they paid me before they went by. And I'm sure if I didn't have my friend with me, they wouldn't have done it. That's the only time I ever held anybody up in my life. I had it coming though. It learned me a lesson after that when somebody came in that I didn't know. He paid me in advance. He didn't wait till he got ready to go out. I got my pay in advance. Then if he wanted to leave camp before the time was up, fine, I didn't care.
They didn't usually do that though, did
never,
they?
That's the only ones that ever did it.
So you go up there pretty much just for the hunting season, huh?
Mm-hmm. Went there the first 15th of September. I always had a party or two lined up to start with, and then they just kept coming. And it was a good thing. It's a little money in it. I like to do it. But, oh man, it was hard work at times. But what wasn't? You know, you take a pack string of horses 25 miles and it's raining and you've got elk on most of them. And you get into camp about 10 o'clock and then you got to unload them horses, put the meat in your pickup or car or something, feed your horses, turn them loose and take off and come to Troy with that meat and get it froze before it spoils. And that'd take all night. And it wasn't a snap. You earned most of your money. to what they call Larkin Landing, and then I went up to Moore Saddle. That was, I thought, a little more convenient. It was if the roads were good.
From Elk River?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is 35 miles east?
Well, how long had you been hunting in that country for a very long time before that?
Quite a few years, yeah. Not exactly there. I think I'd been in there 2 or 3 years in that country, but we hunted down at Kelly Creek. Packed in over the swinging bridge there and went back to Twin Peaks. And hunted in there 2 or 3 years, but this was more convenient, and actually it was, there was just endless game in there. So far back, nobody could get in there to hunt. And you had to have horses. And if they didn't have their own horses, well, there was just no use going. Have you ever been up in that country? Mm-hmm. Where's the hill or Smith Ridge? Morrison?
Yeah, we've been right up in the high country there, around Larkin's Lake and Peak, Larkin's Peak and Mallard Peak,
yeah.
And Black Mountain and.
Oh boy, you covered it pretty good.
Surveyors. Yeah, it's really beautiful country.
Isn't it? Rugged. Yeah, the only goat I ever seen in my life was up in that Black Mountain country. And elk was, well, you've seen the tracks, you know what they're like. There we go.
Did you kill enough game in those years that you were hunting to make to be a big part of your meat supply?
For my own supply,
mm-hmm.
I should say. I'd get one every year. And Alan would get one maybe, or some of the boys would always have at least a couple for ourselves. Until I got so tired of it, I wouldn't care whether I ate it or not. I still feel that I don't like it. But these hunters would, if I'd tell them to come back and go hunting with me today, I guess a phone call would just bring a whole mob of them.
Were you hunting when you were a boy?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was hunting. Since I was so small, the folks wouldn't let two of us squat together. Just one of us had to go alone. Then there's no danger of shooting your partner. That's the way they figured it. Had a 22 single shot and a 12 gauge muzzle loader. And we used to get a lot of game, even little kids, you know. Just, go out in the evening. We wouldn't have to walk out over a half a mile to get a rabbit. Or two. Well, when the birds got big enough to be friars, why, in a mile, we generally had a meal or two of pheasants. They were thick. I had a little doggie, just as zigzag around in that brush, you know, and he put them pheasants all up on limbs. And they just sit there and look at you, and we'd get them and try to hit them in the head, and most of the time we did with that 22. No, one time I got the first shot, and I got my bird. And my brother said, that ain't shooting. He messed around there until he lined up two of them damn things, and he got two of them with one bullet. That's a fact. It sounds like it's impossible. I never could do it. I've tried. I could shoot their heads off with my Mach 6, but I never got two of them together.
You said that you used to go on hunting parties with the wives and friends.
Yeah.
Too.
We did. Agnes went with us here too, and different ones.
Put me right out the middle. No,
Agnes. Yeah, we used to hunt the whole family. Just for fun. Generally got some game. Sometimes quite a lot.
One time you told me a story too about when the Depression, when the banks closed, about this local fellow. Was his name Ball?
Elmore Ball? Yeah.
Oh, what was the deal with him and the banks?
Well,
on that occasion?
I don't remember what he had sold. He'd sold something that amounted to something in the neighborhood of a couple of $1,000s. And the bank holiday come on. The day after he deposited this money, and he wanted to use that money. He had something to pay. And Cahill was in the bank, and somehow Elmer got in there and said, "You knew this was going to happen?" And Cahill said, "Yes." He said, "You didn't tell me, did you?" "No." He says, "I couldn't have dared to tell you."
Mm-hmm.
He says, Elmer says, "I put that money in good faith," and he says, "I'm going to take it out in good faith." And he reached in his pocket and laid a pistol on the counter, and Cahill gave him his money. Now, he didn't threaten to use that pistol or nothing. He just laid it on there. And okay, he'll give him his money, and he walked out of there. They're both friends yet, if they were alive.
Huh. That was funny.
Man, that was tough. You could have money in the bank. I didn't have very much, but I had enough to pay my feed bills and such. And people were hounding me for the feed bill. The bank wouldn't let me have the money to pay it.
Can you have it?
Oh, but you're gonna start. Bad. But it straightened the country out, I guess, financially. From that day ahead, we went right along. Day by day, the conditions got better.
Well, it was a 24 one, wasn't it? 23 or
24? No, that was
32 or 31 or 32.
Franklin D. Roosevelt called a bank holiday.
It was 33.
That's right, it was 33.
Because he wasn't elected until 32.
No, it was 33. That's right.
Well, the banks had no choice. I guess they just had to do it. But
he's a little bit
but
small for that.
Man said he's going to pay a bill. They expected to pay it. He put the money in the bank, expecting to be able to write a check on it tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Everything involved in it was against the law, but then. There never was anybody on the face of the earth any more honest than old Elmer and Corey Ball, either one of them. Perfect. But he wouldn't be taken advantage of. He's an old Tennessean.
There's one story that I can't for the life of me remember that you told me. It sounded like a good dirty story. Yeah. That was about Judge Kincaid and the Madame and in Plouse, and I can't remember what that story was, but I know you told it to me because I wrote it down once that you had. Is it something you can tell a mixed company here? We're all adults.
I think so. Hey. That,
he doesn't have to listen.
Old Madame Palouse had that house up on the hill there, and somebody come in and took some of her jewelry.
No.
Says she had him.
No.
Knew who had it and had him pinned. So, they're having a trial, and Judge Kincaid was asking her, now this fellow took that jewelry? Yes. Where was it? It was in that stand right by my beds, in the top drawer. And where was this stand? Right by the head of my bed, right by the window. And well, what else did you have in it? And she told him. He said, where was that stand? She said, Judge, God damn you, you know just exactly where that stand is. And she says, you know just exactly what was in it.
You never told me that one. Well,
that's all.
Yeah.
That's the end of the story.
What's the end of that one?
No, it's Agnes's one.
No, it was something about. I better not name name.
Well, tell it.
Well, they were going to raid the place, and somewhere out there. One of the guys threw a chamber pot down and happened to hit the guy was going to arrest him on the head. It wasn't empty either.
Oh, yeah.
And then they went out the back door and they never did get him.
This Palouse too?
Yeah.
Wasn't exactly his ancestor or anything like that, but pretty close.
it was my uncle, and I heard the story, and I asked him about it, and he wouldn't deny it or admit it or anything, but he sure laughed. Oh, he did it all right.
Well, of course, then there's that famous neighborhood in the county that had a reputation known as Clap Creek.
Lanigan Creek. Well, Hale Price named that.
What'd they call it?
Clap Creek.
Paul, I can't believe your generation.
You don't suppose it goes on now?
Oh, no. That's why I can't believe it.
You just haven't heard about
it. Oh, this country had funny things happen here and there. Some of them remembered, some of them forgotten.
Okay.
I got a kick out of Frank last night telling stories that I'd heard when I was a kid about people I knew shooting different things.
Caracos.
Mm-hmm.
My brother was out of work. It wasn't the one that you met. It's another one. And worked for Carico on that up in the old hill. About 1920 or 21, somewhere along there. He was a mail clerk and he couldn't get back on right away after he got out of the army. So he took what he could get. I don't think he ever got anything more than his board and room out of it.
Mm. Did the Caracos have that reputation for being as wild and woolly as Frank?
Well, I guess they lived up to some of it. That young fellow shot old Adam in the face. He must have been kind of tough. I guess he thought that Adam had been robbing his sluice box.
Is that the way you'd heard it before when you were young?
Yeah, and if he had, why damn it, he was justified in it. But many tales about the old mine.
Glenn, do either of you know really what the phrase sucking eggs means?
What?
Sucking eggs. You broke him. You should have broken him from sucking eggs.
Yeah, well, that's a bad habit, that's all. Maybe he wasn't sucking eggs, but he broke him of a bad habit. Yeah.
Was that a bad habit some people had? They used to
sucking eggs? Yeah. No, they wasn't involved in sucking eggs, but maybe they did something that was out of line, out of reason, and he said he broke him of a bad habit, or he broke him of sucking eggs, or any other way you want to put it.
I've heard that said, you know, and it always struck me as strange, the expression. I never heard it until this country.
Cats and dogs are, that's what they, we egged.
Well, damn it, the hired men used to.
People dead too if they were hungry enough, I guess. had to be awful hungry for me to do it.
Well, August Mann says, I worked for a place where they didn't feed very good. And he says when we'd come in with the horses at noon, well, the hens had all laid eggs in the feed boxes. And he says we'd lay them up, and when we went back out to plow, he said we put them in our pocket or someplace so we could carry them along with us in the middle of the afternoon. When we got hungry, we'd eat 3 or 4 eggs, just suck them raw. And they were good. I liked them.
I used to like eggnog, and it was raw eggs in that, but you didn't taste them.
Who was it that told you that that Glenn and Agnes were really fine dancers?
Well, I think it was Emmett.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, I've heard it from them.
Well, I thought you were telling me you used to really enjoy dancing.
Well, any of us old guys liable to use that expression.
What?
Broken the second age.
No, I'm talking about dancing. Dancing. I just changed the subject. Laura told me that you and Agnes used to really cut a fine figure on the dance floor. That's
well,
what
I
she told me.
I don't know
me.
What kind of a figure we cut, but we sure cut a lot of them when we liked to dance. We didn't miss any. Yeah, we used to drive from Harvard to Kennedy Ford with a sleigh, or they'd drive from Kennedy Ford to Harvard, or all over the country. We used to drive into town there at Harvard on Friday night with a four-horse team and a big old California rack on it, full of hay and just circle around a little bit, and it'd have it full, and then go up to Carl Lancaster's mother's and have a dance, or go up to Dwight Corey's folks and have a dance. Maybe they knew we was coming, maybe they didn't. It didn't make any difference.
Well, that was a little before my time. I went to Rain's Day.
Uh-huh. Well, you went up there in a sled, didn't you, one time?
Green.
Mm-hmm. No, we used to like to dance, but gee, if you didn't dance, there wasn't much else to do. They danced someplace every Saturday night.
They had streaks of having, what they call it? Everybody, well, we have a program, and everybody was supposed to do something for the program. Well, we'd take time for turns at it, so didn't have to do it every time. Mm. What they call it?
Literary. Yeah.
Where would this be at?
Usually it's schoolhouse.
Schoolhouse.
And then dance after the literary?
No. Uh-uh.
Just literary?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Usually during the week sometimes.
The literary program would take up the whole evening.
The people that came would put on the program, or just the kids would do it?
Well, no. They generally had a kind of a committee. And they'd say, Glenn, you are going to argue with or debate with Homer Canfield on some subject that the two of you want to argue about. And maybe there'd be two of us on each side, or maybe three. And they'd always had some musicians around. They'd had some music, and some of them could sing a little, and some of them quite a lot, and they do quite a lot of singing. Sometimes they put on a play.
Eating a leg or whatever.
So this was really for the grown-ups and not the kids. These literaries.
Everybody.
The
kids.
Year.
Big and little and into kids from 10 to 80.
Yeah.
I never went to many of them. When I was in the East Cove, they used to have them, and I had to go with other kids or other girls. Used to get me to go once in a while. My folks never took me, so.
I'd been going to school over at Pullman. I'd been taking a course in English. And about once a week, we'd have to get up in front of the class and make a speech. And it'd give me a little bit of lead, but they put me up against Homer Canfield one night, and I knew that I had to prepare for it if I was going to do anything, so I did a whole week's figuring and writing notes and come up against him. He was a state representative to Congress. And Hicka snowed him under. He didn't make any preparation, you know. He just walked up there and started talking.
But, what was the subject, do you remember?
Pardon?
Do you remember what it was about at all?
I don't remember. I don't know what we were talking about.
Oh, boy. What's the matter? Hurt yourself? Oh. Kind of hurt his mouth.
Well, I'm going to get all this nice stuff over here.
I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave pretty soon. We got some of that person coming
for dinner
at 6:30. We're barely going to make it back in time. We don't know where
we're going. I don't know. I'm going to think. I was thinking on the way out what I could make that I could put together while we're talking and visiting. You know, I mean, to him, when he comes over. It'll be simple, whatever it is.
Glenn, what's the story you told me once about these horses that you sold that come back after you sold them? You remember that?
Oh, Floyd May? I had a horse that opened the gates and doors.
No,
I sold him to Floyd May. Not to the, on account of him opening doors and gates, but because I needed some money. And I had an extra horse. So I sold him to Lloyd, and he came over and got him, took him home. And a couple of days later, here was old Spike down here in the barnyard. He came home, opened the gate, and come in the barnyard. And I called Lloyd up and asked him if he wanted to buy a good black horse. Oh, he says, is that where he is? I missed him. He says he opened the gate and got out. I let him shut up. I forgot to tell him that horse opened the gate, I bet you.
That's pretty smart.
There used to be a fellow with potlatch, pretty sharp trader. He was really sharp. And he came over to my place four or five times and tried to trade off a horse that he had. And I thought he'd come again, so I had a cow that sucked herself. She just lay down and sucked herself dry. And so I put her next to the door. She was a beautiful cow. She was really nice. And Paul came in and he bought me for a trade. I didn't want to get in on it. I didn't really have anything to trade. Well, he wanted that one next to the door. Oh, I said, gee, I don't want to let her go. I don't think you'd like her. And he kept on. And I think he gave me $5 to boot. So that closed the deal. So I met him in Cluse on the street there. And he said, you goddamn crook. He said, why didn't you tell me that cow sucked herself? I said, you didn't ask me. And I said, why didn't you tell me that horse that traded me was stifled and couldn't back up? So he says, I didn't know that. And I said, Paul, there's only one way to settle this thing. Let's sit down on the curb and have a good cry, both of us. Thank you.
He almost got everybody. If he possibly...